I'm Kevin Kunzman, Managing Editor of HCP Live. Welcome to Doc Talk. Welcome back to the flagship podcast station for HCPLive.com, a comprehensive clinical news and resource site for every specialty and subject in medicine. We always have a ton going on at HCP Live, including our other podcast series, Lungcast, hosted by the American Lung Association, Derm Discussions, hosted by practicing dermatologist Dr. Brad Glick, and Heartbeats with Dr. Manish Patel, our cardiovascular research podcast. Just a reminder that you can follow HCP Live on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and subscribe for top stories and expert insights with our hcplive.com newsletter. Right now, we're beginning our fall conference coverage marathon, and the team is currently producing content from the American Academy of Pediatrics meeting and, as evidenced by today's episode, the American Society of Retina Specialists 2021 annual meeting, being held in person this year. Let's dive into today's episode without much further ado. Please enjoy this conversation we hosted with Dr. Josh Molly, an ophthalmologist with the Eye Associates in Florida, on the eve of ASRS 2021. Dr. Molly joined Doc Talk to discuss a slew of key ASRS 2021 subjects, including new data and discussions surrounding ranibizumab port delivery system, the agent's anticipated FDA decision later this month, long-term faricimab benefits, emerging gene therapies for vision loss, and the boom of would-be first regulated drug options for dry AMD. We got to a lot, so let's go to the conversation. We hope you enjoy. Okay, so Dr. Molly, thank you so much for joining. Really do appreciate your insight, as always, when it comes to these ophthalmology meetings, and just touching base on some of these retina-based therapy discussions, the developments that we're hosting for ASRS 2021. A little bit of a strategically different timing, obviously, due to COVID-19 for this meeting. It's generally a summer meeting, but it's actually really fantastic, I think, because we have AAO right around the corner, just as I was saying. And we also have a pretty important FDA decision pending this month. So it's a really topical time for ophthalmic care discussion. And I wanted to start off on that note, if we can dive a little bit into port delivery system, which is presenting some new data and hosting some more discussions here at ASRS. I just wanted to kick it over to you and ask for some feedback on how you feel about some of the new data that's being shared this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me. And, certainly this is a very exciting time, and especially, my two favorite meetings, the ASRS annual meeting, as well as the American Academy of Ophthalmology annual meeting, are both coming up kind of back to back, which is nice. So a lot of data to go through, a lot of updates from, a variety of companies working on various medications, drug delivery systems. So really, really exciting. So great timing. And I think the fact that we're even having a live meeting for the ASRS and the AAO meeting is just a great victory. Last year, obviously with COVID, did not allow for a live meeting. So it was virtual at that time. And in this year is kind of more of a hybrid, but with a live component. So really nice to see that. That's a great development there, and already a victory in and of itself. In regards to the data, with faricimab, for example, really excited to see what updates we have on the data set. Certainly that's being applied for potential approval in the near future. And could be a potential game changer in regards to what AMD and how we treat patients, and the potential of 16-week dosing is certainly very exciting.
We've been hosting a few discussions leading up to ASRS on the faricimab PDS utility and what exactly it's going to look in utility in clinics going forward. And we'll get into that in just a bit. But I wanted to kind of ask from your perspective as a clinician, within PDS findings, obviously this delivery system being so novel and beneficial for both clinicians and patients, just asking you if what stands out more, I guess, as the more impactful findings, whether it's actually the efficacy, the continued efficacy that we see with anti-VEGF therapies delivered via PDS, or is it the sustained tolerability? I guess, what's the real strong suit of PDS, clinically speaking?
Yeah, port delivery system with ranibizumab, I think the key feature is the durability issue. We have great, anti-VEGF medications with, Lucentis, BeoView, Eylea, and Avastin. The question is, are we able to sustain that from a durability standpoint and drug delivery standpoint? And certainly, I think port delivery system answers that question. And if the, you know, hopefully the regulatory bodies will see that as well. I think that this will be a great addition to our practice in regards to the potential, you know, maybe 6 months of durability with a refill every 6 months that's needed. Now, it is a surgical procedure, so it's going to require a little bit more extra steps than an intravitreal injection. But honestly, I don't think it's for every patient, frankly, but I think the real benefit is that the ability to maintain our robust visual gains with minimizing the number of treatments. And I think that's kind of the major goal with this drug delivery system. And to be frank, I don't think there's any sort of coincidence. I think it's very well designed by Genentech to implement both faricimab, which is a potential 16-week dosing agent, intravitreal injection in the office, and port delivery system, which is again a longer term drug delivery system with refills potentially every 6 months. And the combination of both those will address the vast majority of our patients. Again, you're going to have patients that may do better just on faricimab, maybe can't tolerate a procedure, you know, like an implant for port delivery system, or they just don't want surgery, you know, and there's a small subset of patients that just don't want surgery or procedure and just may benefit while staying on a 16-week dosing agent. And then kind of vice versa, you know, some patients, you know, opt for the PDS system. So I think it's going to be great to have both of those around the same time. I think it's going to address the major issues of you know, durability and drug delivery in the wet AMD space and really be a game changer for how we treat patients. So I really applaud Genentech for, you know, both of these treatments potentially that may see FDA approval fairly soon.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really interesting, exciting to see. And I'm turning a little bit inward to exactly the patient benefit and I guess patient level feedback that we've been receiving. I wanted to ask you if you had any experience on, you know, anti-VEGF treatment administration and dosing regimens as we're speaking here of these great benefits that would better inform the PDS impact and how patients would be receiving it.
Yeah, I think you know, patients are really excited about it. And again, as a physician, you know, I want to do what's best for the patient. You know, we always want to get the best results with the most minimal amount of therapy that's required. And I think these, you know, longer durable, you know, agents and treatments will hopefully help provide that. And again, injection burden is tough on patients, you know, especially ones that require transportation with a caregiver, that were, you know, that's difficult for the caregiver to take off work, for example, to take the patient, just the fact of coming into the office, and, you know, our clinics, you know, having a lot of injection patients and, you know, just having a overload of patients overall volume wise. So certainly I think this would be a welcome benefit to both physicians and patients in regards to less injection treatment burden. So that's what we're hoping to see, and I'm hoping that's how it plays out. You know, and again, I do think that most retina specialists would probably not let a patient go again. For example, in the case of PDS, they wouldn't let them go 6 months without being seen. You know, I think you know, we're looking at probably quarterly visits as sort of a mainstay. Probably maximum, you know, a 16-week visit is probably the maximum we would go as retina specialists and feel comfortable letting the patients go that long without being seen. Because certainly I think monitoring is also very important because things can change. Every patient is different, is an individual, and can have disease reactivation at any point in time. So certainly I think a regular maintenance, at least examination interval, will probably still be maintained every 3 or 4 months despite these longer durable treatments.
Excellent. And obviously we have a pending indication for ranibizumab PDS. A delivery system for later this month. The PDUFA date is up, so an FDA decision pending there. We also, obviously, from earlier this year, faricimab's possible indication for NAMD and DME coming into that space. And obviously, the benefit that we've observed there, as you've already discussed, with fewer administrations far in between. I just wanted to ask you, Dr. Molly, as we sort of expand into this really exciting era where obviously these longed hoped for biologic agents and these unique delivery systems are becoming available in ophthalmic care, and we start to pivot a little bit more into greater, more intimate real world data and start to expand beyond standard, I guess, clinical assessment of a few years. I guess, what sort of duration of trial observation are we looking for, and what sort of data and outcomes are you interested to start observing once we have, I guess, real world assessment more readily available for these agents?
Yeah, you know, certainly with these trials, I mean, we're typically going, usually at least, 2 years is a nice number to think about. But I'm really interested to see, and I think we'll really kind of see maybe separation of some of these agents. We'll get like 5-year data, okay, like 5-year, 7-year data. Obviously, 10 years will be great, but I know it's kind of, more further down the line. But I think that's going to really see where we separate some of these agents, I think over time, the longer drug delivery systems and better agents will hopefully pan out into better visual acuity benefits, because we, anti-VEGF is a very difficult and high bar to set in regards to achieving better visual acuity gains. And it's just, they're such great agents that they set a high bar. And we've yet to see any sort of other agent that's able to be superior in regards to actual visual gains. But I wonder if that will pan out over a longer period of time. And that'd be interesting to see. And I think when we get to that 5-year, 7-year mark and can study these for a longer period of time, I wonder if that separation will occur.
Right, absolutely. Thank you for that, Dr. Molly. Switching gears a little bit more to a continued topic hosted annually by ASRS, and this year's no exception, is gene therapy. Obviously, we're in early phases, mostly speaking, for a lot of the agents and for a lot of the indications that we're observing. This is a real game-changing opportunity for a lot of rare inherited diseases, forms of blindness, pediatric opportunities here to really just reverse course on a lot of blinding risks that we face across a different spectrum of diseases. There's a lot going on there. And, instead of going bit by bit, I wanted to start off and ask you if there's any individual agent right now that you're looking at with the most promise or excitement as it stands for ASRS 2021.
Yeah, I'm overall very excited about the gene therapy, as a class of medications. Again, we saw a lot of success thus far with Luxturna for retinitis pigmentosa and RPE65 genetic mutations. I'm also actually really excited. I actually had the CEO of a company called AGTC. Her name's Sue Washer on my podcast, Eye Care Insider. And I was discussing her gene therapy. Her company's gene therapy for treating X-linked retinitis pigmentosa as well as achromatopsia seems very promising. I mean, very, very promising. And that's a big name to kind of keep an eye on is AGTC in this ocular gene therapy space. So certainly I'm excited about them, what they're doing. I think they have a lot of momentum there. And again, I think, this is a great treatment because it's sort of focused, genetic specific treatment. I think that's going to be the wave of the future, especially for these conditions that have a specific genetic mutation, to focus our treatment specifically on those. And these are life changing. These are patients that we had, essentially no treatment for, and that, we couldn't help them. And it's nice to know that the future is very bright, that we have treatments that are being studied in clinical trials and are just really exciting. So I'm very, very hopeful and very optimistic about ocular gene therapy overall.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for that, Dr. Molly. And I'm curious to ask you as a follow-up, I know this is a generalized estimation from you, but if you could give me an idea of like what sort of proportion of your patients are you seeing that could possibly, given our advancements and like looking further down the road, could actually be eligible for gene therapy care?
Yeah, I think that actually is expanding, because not only is gene therapy being used for these sort of rare inherited retinal diseases, but also is actually being now studied and potentially utilized in conditions that are very common, like wet age-related macular degeneration. So I think that's kind of where the potential of a more broader audience or more broader patient demographics will be seen, because we're able to kind of use the principles of ocular gene therapy and treat a disease like wet AMD or like diabetic macular edema. which affects millions of people. So
yeah.
I think that that's an ever expanding number of patients that may get a benefit from ocular gene therapy. So that's why I think it's such a critical class of medications to look at, because I think the overreaching effect of them, it can be very, very broad and help a lot of people.
Absolutely. I think it's really fascinating. It's almost like a reverse course of therapy development relative to what we generally see, where we're actually starting off with rare indications. We're looking at some of these very niche patient populations and addressing their needs there. And the advancements being made there are now coming to hopefully serve a greater general chronic disease population that just a lot more streamlined diagnostic screening, advocacy, funding available already into the research into that space. It's usually the other way around. We usually have a much more difficult time of getting off the ground, I guess, or a grassroots campaign going, if you will, for advancement of clinical options for lesser patient populations, right? So it's just really fascinating. You're completely right. And it's pretty exciting for what it could do.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it seems like almost like a proof of concept. You want to prove this concept of gene therapy works. And what better way to look at this, a very focused, very, single gene mutation patient population where, you address that mutation head on directly with a specific gene therapy. And to me, these treatments like AGTC, like these other treatments are proving that concept and making it a reality. And again, helping patients with rare diseases, and then which may lead to help for a broader patient base and other conditions. So I'm really, really applaud the ocular gene therapy folks.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really great. And it's just excited to continue coming back to meetings like this every year and see it progress to further phases and get closer to actual consideration and regulated use. It's a pretty exciting time. Switching gears a little bit more, once more, Dr. Molly, this is a subject that I think our team is a little guilty of not honing in on too specifically as much as we do its counterpart, wet AMD, which is dry age related macular degeneration. You highlighted a few teams that are presenting some interesting data here at ASRS 2021. I want to sort of ask you for your perspective on where the field stands right now and what some of the more promising agents look like in this population.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really turning point, absolutely a turning point in retina. I call, dry AMD sort of the final frontier in retina, because really we've had no treatments to date that are FDA approved. And it's a very common condition that we see in patients, and it's really tough. You see these patients potentially every 3 to 6 months, and you see them back. You're mainly following for the development of exudative AMD, in these patients, and you just have to tell them, well, you're dry, which is great, but we don't have any treatment for you. And especially the ones that have geographic atrophy, that have visual loss from it, it's really unfortunate, and you hate seeing that kind of progression. But I mean, just recently now with the Apellis' release of their data of their clinical trials, I think that's been very, very exciting. I think it's to me, it's looking at the efficacy data, it seems very promising. Obviously, there were some kind of mixed results with one trial being positive and met their primary endpoint versus the second trial did not. But I think if you take the pool data, you look at it overall, efficacy wise, I think there's enough there, in my opinion, to get FDA approval. So I believe they will achieve FDA approval. I was really blown away by how relatively safe it was. There was some concern about exudation rates in the phase 2 trials with the Apellis' drug, but the phase 3 trials were really reassuring that this medication is very safe. And again, combined that with the efficacy component, to me, it's going to be our first treatment that we can offer patients, hopefully in the near future, for the treatment of GA. So I'm super excited about it. I think that's kind of where the next frontier is. I think that this is just a great time to be in retina. And that's why I think there's a lot of excitement around this. And it's nice to have these meetings like ASRS, like Academy coming up, where we're able to share updates from these kind of trials and go into more details about it, among all the scientific community to analyze it further. But in my opinion, I think they've done enough to get FDA approval.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's this inflection point of where all these different drug classes for these varied indications across ophthalmic disease are really, it's like a perfect storm. And it's really, it wasn't really generated by anything except circumstance of events that we have this opportunity to cluster all of our perspective and updates on where everything stands. It's really a fun, fascinating like month alone for retina care discussion. So thank you so much for that, Dr. Molly. And it's really great to hear that GA and dry AMD are progressing all along, and as well as our refinement of wet AMD options, as well as gene therapy for a litany of outcomes. I feel like we've, just across those, we've really covered a full gamut of the most fascinating discussions being hosted at ASRS 2021 this year. But I wanted to ask if there's anything else we didn't really get to or anything else you want to highlight from the meeting.
I think it's just gonna be a very exciting meeting. I'm very excited to attend, and I think there's gonna be just some great discussions. You know, we have so many updates that are available now on these different trials that are going on, and kind of hammering out the details and going through those in a scientific fashion. It's just nice to be among scientific community members and retina specialists, and kind of honing in all our brain power to figure out, you know, look at the data very objectively and kind of make conclusions and seeing how that is going to affect our clinical practice. So yeah, it's great to see the meeting back again live, and I'm so excited about it. And it's just a great time to be in retina.
Yeah, I mean, that can't be understated enough that this is a return to in-person discourse too, which is hugely valuable to all the networking and brainstorming as we're talking about here, things that are going to push clinics and practices forward afterwards. So thank you for emphasizing that as well. And thank you so much for your insight and time, Dr. Molly. I really do appreciate it. As always, we love to have your input on what's going on at these meetings that we should be really honed in on. It's as beneficial for us as it is our audience, I'd say. So really appreciate it, and hope you enjoy the meeting this weekend.
Oh, my pleasure, Kevin. Thanks for having me on, and looking forward to it.
Thanks again to Dr. Molly for joining this special ASRS 2021 episode of Doc Talk. And for more live conference coverage and interviews, be sure to visit us at hcplive.com or follow us on social media. Until next time, I'm Kevin Kunzman with HCP Live. Thanks for listening to Doc Talk.